All right, Matthew chapter 25. We had spent last Sunday morning kind of going over a review of Matthew 24, since we just kind of hit it fast the week before that. And so I think that was a good discussion we had and profitable. But as promised, we'd move on from that now to Matthew 25, where the Lord is clearly speaking about His second coming to end the world, to end time, and challenging individuals that hear His words to do something about it, to make preparation, to be ready. So Matthew 25, verse 1, it says, "The kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard, 'Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him.' Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish one said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out.' But the wise answered, saying, 'No, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves.' And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he answered and said, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming.'" All right, so the Lord uses this parable to speak about preparation and being ready. Verse 10, where it says, "Those who are ready." That would make a good title for a sermon, "Those who are ready." And lessons that we gain from preparation from this parable. So, how many virgins do we have here? 10 virgins, that's right. And the Hebrew expression for virgin just usually referred to one that was unmarried. So you have 10 most likely younger women here, unmarried individuals. And he says, "The kingdom of heaven shall be likened unto this." So when I think about these elements the Lord uses, I tend to think he's referring to the church and those that are ready in the church and those that are not. Earlier before, he spoke about his coming and how the world would respond to that. They'll be given in marriage, they'll be eating and drinking just like it was in the days of Noah, and you've got individuals that are not ready there either. And he says it'll be like a thief in the night. You know, so you have individuals going about their daily lives and don't realize that now the end is near and it comes. But here in 25, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto this. And the number 10 being used, which is a symbolic number to the Jews especially. They had the 10 commandments, the 10 plagues that were against Egypt. A number that speaks of completion. So you get the idea of God's complete people. The virgins often used to refer to one that is chaste, one that is undefiled, pure. It's even a term that the Apostle Paul used to refer to Christians when they had been given to Christ. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Verse 2, I'll just read it. It says, "For I'm jealous with you with a godly jealousy, for I've betrothed you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ." Now, I'm not saying that's the only way to understand this particular parable, but it seems to make the most sense to me. Because here you have individuals, they're not necessarily going about their everyday, you know, just unaware of the Lord or anything like that. You have individuals that are actually know who they are and why they're waiting. The bridegroom is coming. But in that group, in that number, you have some that are ready and some that are not ready. Some that have made preparation. So how do we learn? Who's the ones that made preparation? What did they do?
They had extra oil.
They had oil in their lamps. That's right. Whereas the foolish had no oil in their lamps. That's what made them foolish. Brother Tim? Nope. Okay. So that's what made them foolish. So you had some that were prepared. Now, you see in verse 6, the wedding procession begins at an interesting time. That's right, midnight. Most of us don't think of a wedding that begins at midnight, but this one did. And again, it further illustrates that, you know, no one knows when the Lord's going to return. It's going to be an hour in which He says you do not expect. So, yes, those that are trying to figure out and calculate the exact day and month and year and all of that, they're sadly mistaken. It's going to come when individuals do not expect. Even those in the Lord's church don't know when that hour may be. Evidently, we see those in this kingdom of heaven felt there was still time. I know what the Lord would require of me. I know who I'm waiting for. I'm just not ready to go and make that purchase of oil yet. I think my master's delaying is coming. It's nighttime. It'd be silly to go and try and buy oil at this hour. And the trumpet has sounded. And that hour of the bridegroom's return has come. So they ask, hey, give us some of your oil, right? And the wise respond, no. That's right. Lest there not be enough for us. Now, we don't want to stretch the parallel so far. It's not that we'd be able to give some of our good works to another. But it's the idea that you have some that are prepared and some that are unprepared, and there's nothing that the prepared could do for the unprepared. Romans chapter 14 and verse 12 is a good passage to remind us of that fact. Romans 14, 12 says very clearly, so then each of us shall give an account of himself to God. So we cannot, as much as we want, to give an account for another. They will have to give an account for themselves, as we will for ourselves. And so no, there's nothing that we can do for you. You have to go and see to it yourself. Well, verse 10 of Matthew 25, while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, those that were ready went in, and the door was shut. The door was shut. Does that phrase, the door was shut, kind of remind you of another door? That's right. I can't help but think of Noah's Ark and how the Bible says that, you know, the Lord put them all in there and then the door was shut. And then the rains came. And as much as those on the outside would have liked to have been on the inside, open unto us, it could not be done. The Lord has shut the door. He has shut the door. And so here you get this eerie sense of finality that comes from that statement, the door was shut. And even after these other virgins say, Lord, Lord, open to us, he answered and he said, I do not know you. I don't know you. So that is, he does not have fellowship. He does not recognize them. And so it's always a reminder to us, the Lord knows those that are his. You know, some say that you only think the Church of Christ is going to be saved, and truth is, no, we don't even believe that, because there's going to be some that will be lost, because the Lord knows those who are saved. And one may be a quote unquote member of the Lord's church, but if they're not living a life of preparedness, then the Lord knows those that are his and those that are not. No one fools the Lord. And so he makes the application in verse 13. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. And so there's the lesson of His second coming, His return. No one knows when, so the idea is we have to be ready at all times. At all times. Sister Wright, do you have a comment? Right. And that. Right. 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 Which is fast. It's not describing a blink of an eye. But the idea is the word describes the flash of light off the eye. It's that fast. Time is over. Eternity begins. So yes, there's nothing, you know, once the day, the hour has come, it is final, it is done, the door is shut. So here we see this parable that emphasizes waiting for the Lord. And the next one he shares, the parable of the talents, emphasizes working for the Lord. So waiting and working, working and waiting. Now, it's important that we understand that, because you look at the book of 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, and you see there were some Christians that were mixed up about that. They didn't quite understand that. And so you see that some of them had stopped working, so Paul had to encourage them, get back to work. You know, 1 Thessalonians 4:11, that you aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, to work with your own hands, as we have commanded you, that you may walk properly towards those who are outside, that you may lack nothing. And then he says, verse 13, but I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep, lest you sorrow those that have no hope. So he describes the Lord's second coming. And then chapter 5, verse 1, but concerning the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. And so you don't know when he's going to come. I don't know when he's going to come. The idea is you don't need to stop working and say, okay, now I'll just wait. And so the second epistle to Thessalonica and 2 Thessalonians 2, you see that he still has to write further about this. Chapter 2, verse 1, he says, now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to Him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if it is from us, as though the day of Christ has come. Let no one deceive you by any means, for the day will not come unless the fallen away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed. So he goes on to say there's going to be some other things that will take place before that day of the Lord comes. And so chapter 3, he again gets back to that subject of working. If anyone shall not work, neither shall he eat. And verse 10. So some had thought, I'm going to emphasize the aspect of waiting for the Lord to the neglect of working. And so the Lord, in His infinite wisdom, knew that that could be a temptation. And so He describes next a parable in Matthew 25 of taking what the Lord has given and every day adding to it, little by little, until you amass a great return for the Lord. So let's read Matthew 25, 14 and following here. It says, for the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country, who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. Likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. And he who received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid the Lord's money. All right, so here we see the master giving to the servants according to their ability a sum of money. It was a talent, right? Now, how much was a talent in these days?
it written down here, 1,000 in silver.
Okay, 1,000 in silver. Interesting. In terms of a working wage. What's it? No, that's a denarius. A denarius is a day. So you hear different measurements, but some will say a year's worth of labor. I've even had some say as far as 20 years. 20 years, maybe a year for a white-collared worker, and for a blue-collared, one that's a common labor wage, they said might be up to 20 years. So if you have an individual getting 5 and 1,200 and 1,100, if you think about it, all of them are receiving a good bit of money, even that one that got one talent. So it's important to note that everybody got something. There was nobody that had nothing. And these, of course, are referring to our opportunities from the Lord as well as our abilities. Right? And the old saying goes, opportunity plus ability equals
responsibility.
That's right, responsibility. And so the Lord had entrusted this to them. Now, if we think about our lives or ourselves, I think about Romans chapter 12. It's might be just a small little comprehensive list here of some things. Romans 12, there, verse 6, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in portion to our faith. Of course, that was a spiritual gift in that day. Or ministry, let us in our ministry, and he who teaches in teaching, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brother love and honor, giving preference to one another. Not lacking in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoice in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind towards one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. So all sorts of things that the Lord would have us to be active in, working in. He even uses the term "be diligent." Don't be lagging in these things. And yes, some might have, given by the Lord, a little more natural knack for certain things. And the Lord recognizes that. One, he gave 5. One, he gave 2. And one, he gave 1. But even like I said, even if that one was a year's worth of labor, that's a good sum. It's a good sum. And the Lord expected even him to do something with what he had. Any comments so far? Okay. So, what I see so far is responsibility has been given. But I also see something called risk as well. Risk. Because whenever you're going to make an investment, you know, you get a prospectus, and it often says, you know, this is just kind of the way the trend is, but, you know, past performance is not an indicator of future results. They understand that they got to, because no one knows what exactly can take place. And so there is some risk involved whenever you make an investment. And when you and I think about it, our labor for the Lord, in some ways, well, I wouldn't say it's risky. In some nations it may be. It does involve some risk. It involves you getting out of your comfort zone. It means maybe I need to talk to my neighbor, even though my heart is racing and the blood pressure is pounding and I'm getting sweaty palms, but I know I need to let them know I care about their soul. I'm going to take a risk. You know, maybe it means, you know, I need to, you know, if I was a man, I need to lead a song if I've never led a song before. You know, I need to try. You know, I might be totally off note, you know, off pitch, but I'm not going to learn unless I try, right? Unless I push myself to grow. It could be at work, you know. My boss has asked me to do something that feels, it's not outright lying, but I feel deceiving about it. I feel a little shady. I think it'd be best I talk to him about my faith in Christ, my principles. See, there's risk. But until we step out and actually put ourselves out there, we're not going to grow. We'll be like the ones that are just waiting but not working. The Lord expects each one of them to have produced a return, and that return comes by use of what He gave. You see that? Okay, any comments about that? All right, so those are just some applications so far of what we see. So we see responsibility, risk, and I would say rational use. He's not asking us to have risky behavior in our lives, but rational use of the abilities that He's given to us versus rebellious disuse. So the Lord's going to come back. In verse 19 it says, "After a long time the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them." That kind of sounds like Romans 14:12, which you just read, right? So each one will give an account of himself to the Lord. So now the Lord has come and wants to settle accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, "Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I've gained 5 more talents besides them." And he said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You are faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord." He who had received 2 talents came and said, "Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents besides them." The Lord said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter in the joy of your Lord." I find it intriguing here because not very often are there repeat passages in the Bible. But here we find one. The words given to the man who had produced 5 more talents are identical to the man who just gained 2 more talents. Did you notice that? Absolutely identical. It wasn't, "You've done better over here, and you did good over here." No, both received the same accolades. And I couldn't help but think about, do you remember the parable a few chapters back of the workers who had agreed to work for a denarius a day? And then there were some that came later on in the day, right? And one even came at the last hour of the day, and they then lined up to receive their wage from the master. And he gave to each one a denarius. And the ones that began at the beginning of the day, they came at the end of the line and they thought they would receive more. But they received the exact same wage. So what does all this convey to us?
Well, for one thing, it tells us in verse 15 that we need to do a little self-examination, because he gave each one of those talents according to their abilities. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the one he gave 5, I think he expected 5. 3 wouldn't have been satisfactory, it would have been to his ability. The one that he gave 2, I think he expected 2.
All right.
Now, granted, some of us have more talent than others. Some things can do that. But there's no room here for you blaming somebody else or whatever. And that, the Lord knows what our talents are.
That's right.
And He knows if we're slacking. So that's one of the main things that I get out of this.
Right.
Is that we have to determine what our abilities are. So, God.
That's right. That's right. Good, good. Sorry, were you done?
No.
Okay.
No.
Sister Wright?
We don't give to their work according to what Joe is doing. We don't look at somebody else and do our work.
Right, right. There could be a temptation of the five talent to look down on the two talent, but their reward was identical. So like Tim says, the Lord knows our talents. So we should never do that with each other, right? We should always recognize, okay, are they giving effort to grow? And the Lord then knows how much and how far they're able to do that. Then our reward would still be the same. That's good. Right, right. That's 1 Corinthians 3, right? You're unwise when you compare yourselves with yourselves. Thomas, did you have your hand up? Did you say?
Yeah, I was just talking about, you know, when you become a member of the church and not been one, you know, all your life, and then some others might come in, you know, a lot later, you know, they might just be here three or four years or something like that, but in the end, you know, they
were
saying the same thing.
Right. That's right. There was this, I wish Mom was in the class tonight, she'd remember his name, Wilson Prater. Wilson Prater in Washington, and for years and years and years, he was unfaithful to the Lord, and he was dying of emphysema. He had smoked most of his life. And Mom would always take, you know, whenever there's a visiting gospel preacher doing the meeting, he would drive another hour away, farther from our house. It would be 2 hours away from the house, but an hour from the meeting place, and she'd have the preacher visit with him. And this would go on for years and years and years. And finally, she brought Bobby Holmes to him. And she said, Bobby, I don't know if we can keep making this drive. You know, we'll try again. And Bobby told him, he said, Wilson, you're about my age. He says, we don't have much time left here. You know, I wish you'd make your life right. And he said, I know I need to. I know I should. And well, he came back that gospel meeting. And he came forward and restored his service to the Lord, and was faithful for another few more months before he finally died of cancer. And so we're thankful for opportunity and time that God gives to us. And he's saying, don't squander it, use it. But I should suspect if I would use most all my life in the service to the Lord, if he blessed me with a long life, I would be joyous and thankful to see Brother Prater in that wonderful realm. So it's not how much and how much time and all this. It's about being faithful to the Lord with the time that he has given to us. And the reward will be the same. And he knows the differing talents and abilities. Good comments, everybody. Anybody else? Okay. And now we look at the unfaithful steward. There, verse 24. Then he came and received the one talent. Then he who had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I have received back my own with interest. Therefore take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents, for to everyone who has more will be given, and he'll have an abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So it becomes very clear here that the Lord shows a great divide between those that were working for him and those that were not. And he said they'd just be just buried it in the ground. And he said, you were wicked and you were lazy by doing that. You didn't even put it in the bank so that interest might have been gained, however meager or small that interest might have been, but at least it would have been doing something. But instead you did nothing. And so he says that you're not worthy of what was given to you. Take and give it to another. And that unprofitable servant was cast into the outer darkness. Thoughts, impressions?
mainly what he was condemned for was doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He had gone ahead and tried to double that talent or triple that talent and lost it. I don't think the Lord would have condemned him. At least he put forth the effort. And I think that's what he's looking for here is this honest effort from us too.
That's right.
Our efforts, we may not baptize 300 people, or, you know, and, or whatever. Does that mean that those five are less worthy or not as important as the 300 or whatever?
Right.
But, you know, it's at least doing something. You may not have doubled like the other two. You may have lost half of it, but still there's an effort there. And I think the Lord would account for that.
Right. I think you're onto something.
Because it's what does it say about works? That would have been a work. Work and effort.
Mm-hmm. We see that a man is justified by works. That's right. Mm-hmm.
We have to have works.
Right.
And so, but it doesn't, it has to be, I think it has to be good, right, honest, committed work.
Right.
And, you know, that's true in anything else. You've got people who say, I don't know, the circumstances of why somebody is the top seller, but they may have tech or whatever, but do they work harder than somebody? No.
Right.
Probably not. Unless the person just sits at home and does nothing. But that person is out there beating pavement every day and everything like that, but I don't know.
Right. Some salesmen are more naturally gifted.
You know, whatever, that's right. Or they just, they hit that one right person or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, can you imagine the tires salesperson who had the contract with Ford to sell them all tires for all new cars? And then somebody else was out here selling on the side of the road.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the one out here selling on the side of the road, I guarantee you, is now working a lot harder.
Still working.
That one contract.
That's right. That's right.
But it's not going to be as fruitful.
Right.
But his efforts from that point on are 10 times.
Right. You know, what was said to the man with the five and with the two talents, he said, well done, good and faithful servant. He didn't say clever and successful. We're not all going to be clever and successful, but can we all be good and faithful? Yeah, we can all do that. And even this man with the one talent could have been good and faithful, but he was instead did nothing. Did nothing. And you're right. Not everyone's. We have to be careful that we don't measure success in a certain way. That, you know, here's a preacher. Well, he's baptized, you know, 300 people, and then here's this widow that maybe does her work in secret. You know, no one notices it, but God does. And while we may value one more than the other, God sees it as both giving effort, doing the work that God would have them to do according to their abilities. And so that's how God will measure it. Are you good? Are you faithful? Are you working in those things? Now, here's some indicators. Let's look at the foolish man's mindset, his attitude, because I think it might be telltale signs if we find why others or ourselves may not be working for the Lord. Notice first off, the first thing he says in verse 25 was, "And I was afraid." You see, fear often paralyzes us. And it paralyzes us from doing the work that we know we ought to do. And that's why I'd mentioned at the beginning about the risk. Yes, it all involves some risk if I want to gain from the investment. But fear keeps you back from saying, I should do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm afraid. And in Revelation 21:8, remember what the list of those that are in the lake of fire. The first one, he says, but the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the sexual immoral, all have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone. So the Lord, He recognizes that sometimes it's that fear factor that's going to keep people back from actually maturing in Christ Jesus. And the second thing I see in verse 26 is a skewed perspective of who God is. There in verse 24, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you've not sown, gathering where you've not scattered. So he starts to blame God's character. Right? He sees God and he sees Him as not one that's for him, but going to be against him from the outset. And so you find individuals today, you've probably run across them before. Why don't you want to come to church or serve the Lord? I don't believe in God. There's, you know, this happened to me in my life, and He did this over here, and He did this to my mother, and that's it. And that's how they view God, and that stops them from doing the work God would have them to do. A skewed perspective of the character of God. As opposed to them being for them, they believe that He is against them. And God says that stops one from profitable work, and therefore they end up, sadly, damaging their own chances for eternity. Sister Wright?
1 Peter 4:10 says, as each one has received a gift, minister in one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. And He was given a gift. And in Hebrews 5:12, for though by this time we are all been teachers, we need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracle of God. He had grown and learned.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Any other comments? Good comment. So, yes, there's plenty of passages that speak to growing in the grace and knowledge of the Lord. I also think about the passage in 1 Peter chapter 1. Remember correctly, if I'm recalling correctly, 1 Peter chapter 1. 2 Peter chapter 1. 2 Peter 1 verse 5. But also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, to brotherly kindness love. For if all these things are yours and should abound, you'll neither be barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so he's speaking about not slothfully but diligently adding to our faith. And that's part of giving this effort, not burying it in the ground. I've been baptized, you know, I'll be there on Sundays, you know, and that's the extent of my religion and faith. No, we don't want to bury it. We want to produce a return for the Lord. Remember the parable of the sower? Remember? And the seed that fell on the good ground, what did it do? That's right. Produced fruit. Some 30, some 60, some 100. See, it's just like the parable of talents. 5, 2, 1. The Lord knows what each ground is capable of doing. And He asks us to rise up to that and do more than what He's given to us. Do more with that and bring others to the kingdom. Sow the seed, do good works, edify those that are in the kingdom, encourage those that are weak. All kinds of efforts and ways in which we can be involved in the work of the Lord. And it's all important. It's all important. And so make sure we see it through the right perspective. Not just what we perceive to be important, but all of God's work is important, no matter how big or how small. Any final thoughts or comments? It's a challenging parable, because you look at it and you say, where am I? Where do I fit? But I'll say, even if you see yourself as the one talent man, remember, that one talent was a lot of money. So the God has given us, and we're well able to accomplish what He has given to us for His good. Okay, well, that's where we'll then stop this evening. Go ahead and mark your place there at verse 31, where He describes the final judgment scene. Verse 31, Matthew 25. Thank you, everybody, for your good comments.